friends at Survivor.com. It's me, Mario. Hee-hee! You guys, number one.
It's Survivor's Friendly Fire Show, episode 198. 198. For the start of May 2022, we're still no closer to an episode 200, but that doesn't matter. I'm one of your co-hosts, Steve Wright, and joining me is my friend and yours, Ben Salter. Hello, Ben. How has your fortnight been?
I can't remember. It's been a long time since we're here. We've just been playing the same game constantly because there's been nothing out. It's the backlog time, so it's the go back to old stuff. Even like there's nothing new on Game Pass, it's like just go through that massive backlog that you've got.
I played the same game twice in two different versions in a different state. I went to Queensland and I brought...
You went on holiday and you brought an Xbox with you so that you could play Xbox. You spent money to sit in a room and play an Xbox.
Ben, when do I not bring an Xbox with me so I can do that? Or a laptop at least to do some sort of video game thing. I did play a game that I can't talk about yet. We can talk about that next podcast. It's under embargo. But I played Dark Souls and Dark Souls Remastered. So I played the 360 back compat and the Xbox One Series S X version. And loved it. I played it on TV. I brought my X screen with me, which is the Australian made screen that connects to the Xbox Series S and like makes it like a laptop. Awesome. It's really good. It's full HD. It's 1080p. There we go.
Good.
60 frames. Like it worked really well, but it's like, it's the width of the Xbox Series S, which is not large, so like it worked really well on its own, but if you can connect it to like the hotel, you know, 60 inch TV that's sitting there, do that. But I had a really good time. But I think, have you been playing, you've been playing more Elden Ring, I'd assume, or did you go into the Dark Souls?
More Elden Ring. Well, first of all, no one else is having this problem. No one else is sitting in their house in lockdown for 2 years and then taking an Xbox with them for a week-long holiday to another state. Like,
it's great. Really hard. It's so hard. It's hard being me, Ben.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, so that's it's a great device pretty much just for you. but yes, I dabbled. So I believe in the last episode I said there's no way I'm going to play another From Software game. And I haven't really yet because I've got many hours of Elden Ring to go. I'm only up about 55 in or something like that.
Okay.
But I did try Dark Souls 1 through back compat, and it's terrible. Like, it's unplayable. Not the game, the performance. Like, the frame rate is about 12.
It's 30, like, I think.
It's not 30. In the first, like, once you get through that very empty room at the start, it's like, it's a cruel. So I've since ordered the remastered version. I was going to buy them individually, but they're full price. It's like over $200 to buy them from the Xbox store. So I bought like a disc of all of them from Amazon, which I think is coming from the UK because it's not in print here or something.
Oh.
And that was $70, so more reasonable.
Well, between you and I, the achievement list doesn't go into the DLC. The DLC is kind of just fun and free, like free achievement. No achievements. Oh. Zero achievements. It costs money.
You haven't played it.
But I bought Dark Souls 2 and 3 on my holiday because I'm like, I'm digging this. I'm going to finish Dark Souls. I'm going to go into 2 and I'm going to 3. But none of the DLC counts. So I went and looked and like, I think we've talked about this a couple times now. Like they're full price. You're absolutely right. They're full price. But like I went for the non-fancy deluxe edition. I just bought like the base game and I don't care about the DLC. I just want to play the game and try the achievements. Try to get the achievements. Got really excited when I beat a boss on holidays and just immediately went and did a thing and realized that I shouldn't have done a thing because I've just like locked myself out of two or three achievements because there's like a side path that I should have taken before I did something. It involves the Lord Vessel if you're a Dark Souls person. I'm now part of that thing. I was making fun of Leo and Hamish for like spoiling Dark Souls things and Elden Ring things, and now I'm like fully invested. I'm like, oh, I can't talk about a game that was made in 2013. Oh, that would be blasphemy. But I get it. They're really fun. I'm enjoying it immensely. And I hope that you go down that same path because they're super fun.
I might have a break first. I kind of feel like I need to try something non From Software-y after this, because there's still months before the next big release, right? So there's a big time to get through the backlog. And as I've said on this show before, I've got Cyberpunk to play. I'm 2/3 of the way through the Mass Effect remaster, so I should go back and play 3. Probably a bunch of other stuff, which I've forgotten, that is in my backlog. If you're on Xbox, using the pins to have like what you're playing level 1 and then like what you're going to play next or what you should play, it's actually really helpful, because otherwise I forget about these things and I've got to queue them up. So PlayStation probably has similar, but I haven't bothered to set it up in the same way. Switch doesn't, because they haven't updated their menu since it launched in 2017. Exactly. The same. I think they did add a folder, actually.
You can make folders. That's it. So it's kind of the same, but it's a lot of work. Speaking of the Switch, I've also had a chance to play Nintendo Switch Sports, which is basically Wii Sports, if you're familiar with that, but it's now Nintendo Switch Sports because it's sports on Nintendo Switch.
Why didn't they call this Wii Sports Switch or something? Because, like, it's still a cool name. I get it's not on the Wii, but...
Just call it Wii Sports 3. Like, who cares? Just go for it. It is Wii Sports, in everything but name. And you're using the Joy-Cons instead of Wiimotes. But all of them? Most of them? We're not a fact-based show, as you know. A lot of the games, at least, have come from previous iterations of the Wii Sports franchise. There's bowling. There is badminton, tennis, Chambara, which is like sword fighting, almost like boxing, but not quite boxing. There is, what have I forgotten already? There's the two tennis
volleyball
game, volleyball. Thank you. And there's one more, soccer. There you go. Thank you. It's like you've played this, but you haven't. You're just helping me.
I read your review though, so
thank you.
Chunked it out into like sport by sport. So.
Well, because they are sport by sport. And I had my husband's family over, and I'm like, we're playing Wii Sports. Or no, we're playing Nintendo Switch Sports. It's like Wii Sports. We didn't have Joy-Con straps. I couldn't remember where I put them. So we did it against every 5-minute interval like warning from Nintendo about not having straps on and breaking your TV. And of course, you've already probably gone to Reddit and seen thousands of TVs being broken by people who decided not to wear straps. But
That's a risk, because this is the game that Nintendo sent out like thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of those, what should we call them, rubber protectors for Wiimotes that reminded everyone of something else. And they
condoms,
like,
you mean condoms?
Oh, I don't know what the rating of the show is. But yeah,
you can say condom, okay? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so like they sent them all out, and you couldn't really do that for a Joy-Con, right? So if people are smashing their TVs with Joy-Cons, what are they going to do this time?
Well, I was going to say, admittedly, like Joy-Cons are like so much smaller and less heavy than a Wiimote, but also so are TVs at this point. So like, it doesn't take much to probably wreck your little like 2-millimeter bevel thin OLED screen. We didn't have an accident, thankfully, and we started with bowling, which I think is the easiest to learn, but it's weird. The same problem that I had in the preview, everyone playing had at my house. It's the weird muscle memory of, if you've played Wii Sports, you've probably played a lot of Wii Sports, and you've probably played a lot of bowling. And because it's the most accessible. It's the easiest like motion, real motion to game action that you can have. And in Wii Sports, you'd hold the Wiimote trigger to pick up the ball, but you'd release the trigger to throw the ball, and every single person was doing that with the Joy-Con. But in this version, you just hold the trigger the entire time for some reason. It's very strange, to the point where the game tells you, like, oh, you're doing this, you should let go, you shouldn't let go of the trigger. But it's literally muscle memory. You're so instinctively used to doing that. It took us all a lot of time to stop that. It's super great fun. The bowling's the best. I think tennis is the most strategic of the two racket games. Badminton's more just kind of like one-to-one motion, and you can sit there in a rally of like 25 or 30. It just like, it's hard to not hit the ball or the bird or whatever. Volleyball is super fun, but if you have little kids, it's super reliant upon timing. So you're doing the bumping and the setting and the spiking, but you have to be pretty spot on with when you hit the ball. And the closer you are to a perfect timed any of those actions, like, you get kind of like a combo meter, and it makes it harder to return the ball on the other side. So that it takes a bit of getting used to. Adults won't have a problem with it. It'll be pretty fun for them. But with kids, it'll be probably a bit dicey. Soccer's really fun. It's very much like Rocket League in that you're chasing down this giant ball on a pitch, and there's not a lot of players around, and it's a pretty large pitch, so you got a lot of room to kind of set up passes and kicks and stuff. Soccer right now uses two Joy-Cons, but you can use a leg strap for a shootout mode, and that's like literally just using your leg for one of the Joy-Cons and your hand to move your player around. It's weird because I like the leg mechanic, but it's not available yet in any of the other soccer modes. When it is introduced later on, it'll be kind of fun. The shootout mode with the leg stuff is really boring, to be honest. Like, someone kicks you the ball and you just have to like time the kick into the goal. It's kind of like, once you get the motion and the timing, there's nothing to it. But the legitimate soccer matches are quite fun. And I don't rate Chambara. It's just like a flailathon, kind of like boxing was. And I've forgotten one already, again, of the modes. There's six. Bowling, tennis, and volleyball, the ones to go for. Soccer's pretty good, but it'll be better with leg motion. With a leg strap, of course, if you have one. If you don't have the game yet, buy it physically, because you get like a leg strap basically for $2 compared to a digital price. So like, it's a no-brainer. Golf is coming. It'll be good. It'll be Wii Sports Golf. It's the Joy-Con is perfectly suited for this kind of stuff. And like, I think you told this to me and I kind of ran with it, Ben. The only downside is that it's not a full priced game. It's like $50 Australian, but it's still not free. And we were used to playing this on a Wii as a pack-in, and it was just like there, and it was an easy way to show people how this worked. Whereas the Switch has been out for a while. It's stuff that you've already done. It's $50. If you like Wii Sports and you have a whole bunch of people in your house, or you're going to have a bunch of people at your house, absolutely. This is a no-brainer. I didn't get a chance to try online before the review. You know, it's online sports. There's a weird disconnect.
Really what this is for. Like, yeah. The whole point of the motion play is you come and muck around in your house together with someone. So
yeah.
But yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't a pack-in with like a Joy-Con. Because like they did a Wii Remote with a game called Wii Play, which was basically some proof of concept mini games that weren't as good as Wii Sports. And they added just like $10 to a Wii Remote, and you got that as well. And it sold like 30 million copies because of that. It's one of the best, top 30 selling games of all time or something. So why didn't they just get a pack of Joy-Cons, cost like $120 or something, sell it for $150 with Switch Sports? You're getting it at a reasonable price. You're getting the extra Joy-Cons to play with, so you can actually play four player. And people probably feel that's more value. And they're still not giving it away. They're adding some cost, but a more reasonable cost.
Well, and pack in things like 1-2 Switch with it, which is like a super amazing. I think was it free? It was pretty cheap. It came out at launch anyway. 1-2 Switch is like a really good example of like a pack in kind of mini game fest.
But it wasn't packed in. They sold it for $80. So Nintendo Land was packed in on Wii U. Wii Sports was packed in on Wii. And then for Switch, they decided nope. Which I kind of get, because 1-2 Switch is a good concept of the Joy-Con, but it wasn't really a concept of what the Switch was, which was you could play your great game in handheld, in TV mode, and it's the same experience, which wasn't really true for that game. So I can see maybe that's why they didn't do it. It wasn't showing off what you could do like Nintendo Land did with the Wii U gamepad, or Wii Sports did with the Wiimote. But it only came out like today or yesterday that Reggie was the reason Wii Sports was sold with the Wii. Like, Miyamoto and Iwata didn't want that to happen. Now, this is his memory of it, him saying that they, and this is a long time ago too, so I'm sure there were probably a few conversations he didn't remember.
The American taking credit for something? What? No, sorry.
I can believe that he had a big influence in doing it, and that's why it happened. And I think if they didn't pack in Wii Sports, the Wii wouldn't have sold 100 million units. It wouldn't have been sold out for years, because that was... It came with it. That was the thing that you gave, your family or whoever came around, and you said, here, here's this. And when they bought their own, it came with that one thing. They may have never bought another game, but they knew what Wii Sports was. I think it would have failed potentially following the GameCube if they hadn't had that with it, because without that, we didn't really get it. We didn't get why we need this different controller. You're telling us it's going to have different experiences. I think they needed to prove it, and they did. But like, for Miyamoto to apparently have said, we don't give away our games, they did it all the time. Like, the Game Boy was a success because Tetris came with it. Like, I know that wasn't strictly their game, but I think they published that
one. It was a game, and that still counts.
Yeah, and then there was, like, Super Mario 3D All-Stars or World. One of them came with the SNES in a lot of regions. Like, they bundled that up pretty quick. So it definitely did happen. But, yes, Wii Sports was sold with the Wii in every country except for Japan, where it was not, which is why the Wii Sports sales and Wii console sales are a little bit different. So, yeah, interesting. And it made the Wii what it was, and now we're here years later, and they've gone away from doing that again. So Reggie's not there. He couldn't make them give Sports away with something else.
And I guess it also kind of like shows the sort of limitations of the Switch and Nintendo's strategy right now, because if you're playing this on a Switch Lite, which doesn't have detachable Joy-Cons, like you can't play on a...
You wouldn't.
On a real Switch, you can't actually play with Joy-Cons connected to the Switch. It won't let you. You have to disconnect the Joy-Cons and play. So I'm imagining that the Switch Lite somehow negates that issue, but you have to have a second set of Joy-Cons to then connect to it to play. Yeah. I don't know how a Switch Lite works, but like that's a weird thing. The other thing is, I guess, if you're trying to play tabletop and you're playing any sport, like it's so small on the screen, and if you have one or two people, it's not... Because you're seeing a sporting field, so it's so pulled out camera-wise that you can't actually really see what's going on. So you got to get really close to the screen, but also like far enough away from the person you're playing with or the other people you're playing with like tennis or something, that you're not like smacking him in the face as you're doing something. Whereas like the 1-2 Switch game, everything was very simple and everything was very large on the screen, even in tabletop mode. So like you didn't have to stand close to the screen, you could still know what to do and understand what your motions were doing for it to work. But like in this sports game, you got to get really, really close. Even like with bowling, it's like, am I lined up for the pins? I got to get really close, got to figure it out and then bowl. So it's like, it's cool that the Switch can do all these things with all the modes, but it's also detracting from an experience like this.
I think they use tabletop mode in advertising for 1-2 Switch only, which is even stranger why they didn't like bundle that game with the console or with a Joy-Con pack. And since then, I haven't really seen it, because I would suspect that about 99% of gameplay is either on TV or in handheld mode. I think no one is ever using tabletop mode. The only game that really did use it, as you say, is 1-2 Switch well.
Yeah.
So I think it's a non-issue. Now, if you're standing around your Switch Lite playing this with four of your family, maybe you should invest in a Switch, like if you get into it. Once you get the Wii.
Correct. There's no handheld for the most part. I'm assuming Switch Lite, obviously it can be in handheld because you can't unhandheld it if it's not connected to a TV. But yeah, like it's weird. And hopefully, if you do play this, you know, despite me saying I made it unscathed with my TV, please don't. If you have the straps, please put on the straps, because I've already seen on Reddit just like hundreds of TVs getting smashed in. It will happen to you eventually, so just, you know, don't tempt fate.
Well, it may not be you. It may be your, you know, cousin or something who doesn't often play games, and they don't quite have the grip on a Joy-Con that you do. So it's not just about what you think. You think, I'm never going to let go of this, but they may do. Especially with the muscle memory, they let go because they let go of the button, which is basically like the whole grip on a Joy-Con. It could just, and they will fly. They're so small and so light.
Your adorable grandma who doesn't let go of the trigger lets go of the entire Joy-Con. But hey, I was kind of secretly hoping my parents in law, they're my parents, from another husband, my only husband, you get it, would accidentally let go of the Joy-Con and wreck my TV so I could get an HDMI 2.1 TV, but it didn't happen. I need an excuse to get a new TV, and if it happens to be a Joy-Con going through it, oh no. Alas, didn't happen. Anything else you want to say about any FromSoft game or Switch Sports before we get into the news?
No, let's do it.
Well, it's this weird time of like not a lot of news, but the news that's coming out is crazy big. And undeniably, the biggest story of the last 2 weeks is Embracer Group, who own a whole bunch of IP and a whole bunch of like kind of mid-tier is probably being nice. A lot of mid-tier studios, they've managed to acquire three of Square Enix's biggest studios, them being Eidos, Crystal Dynamics, and Square Enix Montreal, I guess otherwise known as Square's Western Studios.
Yeah. Well, three pretty good studios as well. Like, so Tomb Raider is probably the biggest thing they've made, but they recently made Guardians of the Galaxy. Crystal Dynamics is also working with Microsoft on the Perfect Dark remake or reboot, whatever that is.
Which you'd assume is contracted and will continue on regardless of this acquisition news.
Yeah, someone from Xbox like retweeted the Crystal Dynamics tweet to say like it's, you know, super exciting that they're going on their next chapter and they're still helping us with Perfect Dark, basically. So that is happening. You would have thought Xbox would have been interested in nabbing them based on that's what they're doing now, and they previously had the Rise of the Tomb Raider deal, but with getting Activision and getting that all approved, they're probably sitting tight at the moment.
I think it's more that they're not actually allowed. I think there's, because of this acquisition, I think they're not able to do extra deals. And I think part of that is also because Sony has just done this big deal with, I think it's like $1 billion or something with Bungie. They're also equally, because they're going through all the checks and balances, not able to make a huge acquisition like this. Maybe. I might be talking out my rear end. But Embracer Group snagged these three studios for like not a lot of money. I have no idea what the amount is, but it seemed low.
$300 million.
That's US. Not a lot.
Very cheap.
They paid, what did Microsoft pay for the Rise of the Tomb Raider exclusive or Shadow of the Tomb Raider exclusive?
I don't know, but
like
the
half that
Rise
at least.
Of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
The rumor was $100 million for 12 months exclusivity.
Yeah. Two-thirds more, you could have owned Crystal Dynamics and the other two studios.
And the Tomb Raider IP. That's the big thing. It's not the studios. You get a small amount, but some decent IP there. So I would have think, so yes, Sony and Microsoft are probably a little bit interested, but as you say, they're obviously bigger fish to fry for them. So that's why they went and play. And that's why this Embracer Group, who a lot of people probably haven't heard of, but they used to go by THQ Nordic, which is now just one of their publishing arms. And they own a bunch of stuff. They own Koch. They own Aspyr, that company that keeps putting out like old Star Wars games on Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they do other stuff, but that's their main thing. And a whole bunch more that I've forgotten, but like heaps. They own 120 something developers.
And
a
lot like of them some indies, 800 and something size. Pieces of IP, which now include Thief and Tomb Raider. And I'm forgetting other ones. They listed more, but like, I think those are kind of the biggest ones. Tomb Raider certainly is huge. Thief, not so much of late. And I kind of think that like it's this weird thing of, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing. I think it's ultimately good, because usually when you're seeing anything coming from Square Enix, especially on the Western side of titles, it's like, oh, well, like Avengers is a poor example because it was pretty bad, but like Avengers didn't meet sales expectations. Outriders didn't meet sales expectations. The last Tomb Raider didn't meet sales expectations. The Tomb Raider before that probably didn't meet sales expectations. So like, I don't know if it's this Square having unrealistic goals or like ambitions or just not a lot of support for things that aren't Final Fantasy. Theoretically, this is good for the Tomb Raider brand, which there's already been a new, you know, Tomb Raider game announced on Unreal Engine 5 that's probably years off in development. So this is presumably good, I think.
I don't know. Yeah, so Square Enix didn't really know what to do with these developers, it seemed. They, especially considering the rep of Crystal Dynamics recently, like they've had a lot of hits. And then a few like Avengers, which didn't really work out, and they didn't really know what they were doing with that. But they turned it around straight away with Guardians of the Galaxy, which is great. So I would have thought they were worth a lot more. And yeah, they must just be wanting to get out of that side of development. They've decided that we're going to focus on our in-house being Japanese developers. And we can nail Final Fantasy, basically. There are so many of those games, and they sell massively. So, but it's not, Tomb Raider didn't sell badly. The three games sold like nearly 40 million copies. So if that's below expectations, I think you have put your expectations way too high.
Well, and like, I'm sure when, like, so the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider movies did fairly well. They were probably paying a lot of their income directly to Angelina Jolie, but the new is it Vikander? The reboot, which is follows the reboot. I think it made somewhere between like $200 and $300 million, which was way over the budget, and they're making a sequel at some point. Like some of that has to go back to the owner of the IP, which is now not Square Enix. So like, yeah, it's like I'm keen for all this. Square Enix isn't fully out of, like, the Western game, though, I guess. Like, they're keeping IP, including Just Cause, Life is Strange, and Outriders, which was revealed in a press release. The same press release, though, also said that Square sold the three studios to get into, like, blockchain and AI and that kind of thing, which just is, like, one, how much does that cost? And two, like, don't do NFTs, please. Just, like, get out of, don't do it. But
don't sell your biggest non-Final Fantasy franchise to do that. So,
well, yeah, like Outriders, they kept Outriders. Why did you keep Outriders?
Just Cause. So Life is Strange is good, but those other two,
yeah, don't matter. Well, so that's what it is. We'll have more on it. The acquisition, I guess, is slated to finalize in September 2022, and we'll keep following it. It's pretty new. It was announced like 2 days ago at the time of recording. It's May the 4th, Ben, so May the 4th be with you.
That's right, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Let's keep going. So we know that the PlayStation Plus tiered system is coming the 22nd of June for Australians, also for Europe. But there's been a little bit of news kind of coming out of it. Not so much from Sony, but by way of leaks. And a report says that Sony kind of updated its EULA with developers to say that any game that costs more than $34 US wholesale, so it's around like $40 at retail, will need to offer up a limited time demo of at least like 2 hours a length. So people that have the PlayStation Plus premium subscription in most parts of the world, which would also translate to the deluxe subscription in Australia for us non-cloud people. So people who have a subscription can play a demo before they decide to buy your game. It's this weird thing, Ben, and I'm curious for your thoughts on it. Like, demo's good, but like, I can't just think of the end user experience. I'm kind of thinking about the developers too, so I don't know where you sit with this.
Well, I assume they're going to do it like EA Play, where it's like 2 hours of just the first, like you can play any part of the game for 2 hours. But of course, EA did that for a lot of things, and they put in restrictions for things like the Star Wars game, where it was kind of only a 12-hour game, so they didn't want you to play anything. Because theirs is 10 hours, of course, and they don't want to say, well, you can play this one for 2 hours, you can play that one for 4 hours, that one's for 10 hours, it's 10 hours or nothing. And so they just started doing nothing for a bunch of games.
Hmm.
I think that's why Sony's gone such a short time frame. Like, 2 hours is not much. But there are some games where it would give away too much, and people probably would just say, oh, I'll wait for this to be added to the catalog at some point and I'll play it then. So I don't think it's going to be like the old school style demo where it's a curated certain section, unless they have like an E3 style, here's part of the game from the middle, which we're going to let you play. Maybe some will do that, but I think most is going to be you just get 2 hours of access while the game's running, your clock's ticking, and then at some point you time out, you either buy it or you don't. I wish something like this existed for Horizon, because I wouldn't have bought it. Like, I've played less than 2 hours and I'm not into it. But yeah, it's strange. It's not a hook. It's an odd thing to charge people for. Like, EA kind of got away with it because their subscription's so cheap and it was thrown into Game Pass in the end, which presumably means they didn't have a great subscriber base. Sony put that, if they put it in the cheap tier, I would have think, fair enough. Like, they're giving another perk to the entry-level PlayStation Plus to give those people who are deciding to stay there something new and a purpose to keep it if they weren't really that into it.
Yeah.
But they put it on the top level. And I don't think this is a top-level perk. Like, it's pretty meaningless. And it's probably just going to annoy some developers, as you say. Like, some of them are not going to want to have people playing just a small chunk of their game, especially the opening. Like, a lot of games, you get 2 hours in and you're still learning. Like, if I got 2 hours into Elden Ring, I don't think I would have gone and bought it. Like, it was beyond that it finally ticked. A rare example. Yeah, I think it's going to be divisive. And there are some games where 2 hours is probably too much. Like, you're going to get too far in and you're like, I'm not going to pay for this now because I can kind of feel that I've already got everything I want out of it.
It's a weird thing if it's just the game kind of like gated to a 2 hour experience. There's the opportunity for people to try to like hack it and get access to the full game or like data mine things that you know, you're getting early in some cases, obviously. The restriction from the leaked documents say that games that need to provide a demo can do so, like, up to 3 months after it's released. But, like, presumably, like, the big guns in the world would just kind of, like, factor this into their game dev schedule and just put out a demo ahead of time, because the demo is really to try to get people to buy it, so you want hype ahead of time. If it's not just like a 2-hour chunk, though, that just requires a whole bunch of extra work from a developer to produce a demo. And you were talking about E3, there's always been these stories of developers saying, you know, like, oh, you know, it takes someone like half a year or like a year. It takes these people out of our actual dev to make this like vertical slice of a game to go and show to, you know, games journalists for a week. And then like we never do anything with it. And like maybe you'd put that into Xbox and PlayStation as a demo. But like it's a lot of extra money. Hours. Oh, yeah. It's like a 15-minute slice in that case. Exactly. Yeah. So it's this weird extra requirement on developers that will just mean more effort on their part. Or it could mean, you know, like an indie developer who wanted to price their game at $35 American or wholesale, you know, has to bump it down to 30 because it makes more sense. It's more viable for them to not charge as much and not have to produce this demo for, like, I don't know what it will be, but like a small subsection of overall PlayStation Plus subscribers. It's the top tier of three tiers. And then there are people that don't have PlayStation Plus. It's really weird. And like, I don't know the numbers, but Xbox Live Arcade had a demo requirement for anything that was released on it. And that hasn't survived at ID at Xbox and stuff like that. So like, I would assume that developers went, this is too much extra work on us. You can't ask this of us. And that's why that has gone away. Also, the other thing, I guess, is that Xbox Game Pass as it exists is kind of like a demo system. So Tunic is super hyped and everyone loves it. And I appreciate that people like it. But I downloaded it for free because I'm subscribed to Game Pass. I played it for a little bit and I'm like, yeah, I get it. But it's like, I don't know, it's not for me. I'll maybe get to it later on. I didn't spend money on it. I tried it. Didn't like it. Or didn't like it enough to keep playing, I should say. And just didn't. Like, no harm, no foul. Whereas, like, if you have that on one platform, and you've got maybe a demo if you spend the highest tier of subscription, like, which is better for a consumer? I'd rather just try games on Game Pass and pretend they're demos and either keep playing them in full or drop off them because I had a crack and I didn't like it.
Well, that's a good point, because even on the middle tier of PlayStation Plus, you get access to 400 PS4 and 5 games, which is exactly the same as Game Pass, essentially, except without the day one releases. So yeah. The demos in the top end are demos of games which are not in PlayStation Plus, because otherwise you don't need the demo, you get the whole game. So that means, why would you necessarily go and play a 2-hour chunk of a game which, if it's not there at launch and it's 3 months later, who cares, that's too late. If it's there for launch, fine. If you can kind of see if it's good enough for you to pay launch day price, or if you want to go and wait for it to get cheaper. But you're paying a subscription for at least 400 older games. If you're at the top tier, another like 200 on top of that. Why do you then need these demos beyond that? Like, there's probably a handful that you want to try. Like, let's see what GT7's like. Fair enough. I kind of get that. But on the whole, I don't think you need a demo of every single game. How many of those are going to be played when you've got access to hundreds of full actual games in that same subscription?
And even the likes of GT7, like, you get a demo maybe, but like you don't get the game if you like it paying for the highest level of subscription. You still have to go and buy it because it's not in the subscription. The thing I liked about EA Play in the 10-hour trials, like, it was totally suited for, and it was totally designed, let's be honest, for the FIFAs and the NHLs of the world, where you'd play 10 hours. I think you, especially on Xbox, you got the achievements like straight away. But like that was EA trying to get you into HUT or FUT, like, yeah, card-based system. Keep, you know, you want to keep playing this after 10 hours. You want to keep giving us money so you get the best cards to do the thing. So it's all a money game, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. That was the last year's game is already in your subscription. You can play the whole thing, but you can play the new shiny version, because it's an annual franchise, and you can get sucked into that one. And by the time you play 10 hours, you're like, oh, I don't want to go back to the old one and do all this again. Like, I've already moved to the new one. I'll just pay for it.
Yeah.
that was, yeah, you're right. That was their strategy. And that's why for some other games, they said no trial for this one. And that kind of annoyed people. And fair enough, because that was one of its things. But it's kind of died off EA Play. Like, I don't know too many people who just subscribe to that. But yeah, it's a strange choice. I can kind of see a marketing meeting around the table and people saying, let's do game trials. Like, that's an easier way to make other developers do some work that gives us a perk to put in the top tier. But I don't think it's as valuable as I think it is.
Well, and it's... Yeah, it's like for the end consumer, yay, demos. Like, ooh, you get to try a game. Like, I do understand the appeal of that. I also understand that people go into EB Games and, you know, buy a disc and try it for more than 2 hours. But then within however many days they can return it, just go, yeah, not for me. Like, that's a game trial too. So I don't know if the effort required on the developer's part will end up worth it, and I guess it's something to see. I'm not convinced it's a good idea, but something I am convinced about being a good idea is that Sony has started hiring staff to start a game preservation team. So game preservation is always a hot topic with every single person ever. People have applauded Xbox for trying to do back compat from Xbox to 360 to One on the Series X, and Sony's kind of sort of dabbled in it and not. Like, I own Resident Evil 1 and 2 from the PlayStation 1. I think I can still play them on Vita and PlayStation 3 if I had a PlayStation 3. And if my Vita, I could figure out where I put it. But that doesn't transition to new PlayStation systems. And people are upset that, you know, we're losing older games to time. If you don't have a disc or a cartridge in a console that plays it, or a, you know, a TV that can connect to the console that plays that, those games are lost. So we don't know much about this preservation team, but basically anything that is trying to make older games accessible to new audiences is a good thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I think looking forward, this is not going to be as big of a problem in the future because everything's now on a similar type of architecture, and I think your next console will play your PS4 or PS5 games, and the one after that will play all that from PS4 onwards. It's not going to be a huge issue moving forward, except the ongoing licensing issue, which is never going to go away. There's going to be cars which don't have a license anymore, music which doesn't have a license, so you can still play them if you have them, but you can't, you know, rebuy them, and at some point you can't re-download them. I don't think there's any avoiding that. Buy the disc copy if you're really worried about that. Yeah, that's probably the thing which games is never going to get away from. That isn't an issue in movies and TV and things for some reason. You rarely see like a movie from the 80s go out of print because, if it's popular, because it's got a song in it which hasn't been relicensed. So there's obviously a different way that games and movies and TV sort that out. They seem to be, once they're out, doesn't matter what's in it, they can keep selling it. Not the case for games. That's a big problem all the time for things like Forza. And even licensed games, like, there's not a great deal anymore, but at some point, like something like Guardians of the Galaxy, that deal's going to expire and you won't be able to buy it anymore. And it will just be done. And they're the games from previous generations which are never going to come back because they're too hard. GoldenEye is a fantastic example of what, like, the level of licensed game that people would love to bring back. Rumor is that it's finally going to happen at some point, although we've not yet.
You've been saying that for like 2 years.
Yeah. There was pretty strong rumors earlier this year. Maybe we'll see that at Xbox's showcase potentially. But like, there's heaps. I'm sure, like, you have many licensed games you've loved over the years, I'm sure. They were really big, like early 2000s, like that PS2, Xbox, GameCube generation. And even early
Simpsons, like, hit and run. Like, it's just hard to play. And I can't imagine, like, there wasn't a lot of licensed stuff. Like, obviously The Simpsons was the license. But, like, that's it's hard to get and play on a... something that's not illegally obtained. Yeah.
But yes, you shouldn't have an issue of getting like your major big franchises, like your Resident Evils in their original form should be easily accessible. And I suppose to some degree they are, like, at least you can get Resident Evil 1 through whatever number we're up to on Xbox. But I don't think you can get the original 2 and 3. You can get like the GameCube remake, which is then remastered in HD.
Yeah.
Maybe you can. Maybe there's like a 360. I don't know.
You can get emulators on PC, but it's not, I don't think it's fully legal. Well, yeah. So, like, and I'm sure some of this game preservation team is working to get classics to be put into a non-purchasable arrangement, but accessible through the PlayStation Plus tiered system, but like, you know, at least they're accessible, and Nintendo's kind of doing the same sort of thing, which is, you know, like, eh, it's not great, but at least they're playable if you're desperate to play these games.
Nintendo is the worst at it because they've re-released them. They've won. They're being caught out using like ROMs they've downloaded on the internet that someone else has made and selling them, which is against their own like ethics that they go by. And then they've had like they've sold us all these games in decent enough form. Some issues with emulation, but on the whole, okay, we've been able to play them for the last almost 20 years. But then they keep reselling them and they make your old ones not accessible, which is what PlayStation has done sometimes, to be fair, as well. And now they're drip-feeding them on purpose. So they know what they're doing. They're not really trying to improve the situation. If anything, it's worse than it was 15 years ago. Like, you could get almost any SNES, N64 game that you really wanted on Wii, at least the big-name games. And now they're slowly releasing them on Switch. So I'd put them as the worst at it, even though we're not going to be able to get any PS3 games in Australia, which means that Sony's not doing a great job either, at least not for the whole world. But hopefully having this team means they're actually working on that real PS3 emulation, because that's the clear thing they're missing. But I think it's also more to preserve today's games, to make sure instead of having to fix this in the future, we've got these ones sorted out now, so that when we have our subscription in 20 years, we've got all our PS5 games.
We just need to worry about climate change so we have a place to play on. In that, I mean the Earth. a short show's a good show. Let's get into our favorite segment, Ben. This Fortnite in delays. It's not so much delays as shifting, I think, is the theme now. And I almost think that's because we're so kind of far into the pandemic, or the consequences at least of the pandemic, that no one's committing to release dates, so there's less things to delay. But I digress. The Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake, which was announced in 2020 and has been delayed twice, the last time indefinitely, has moved from Ubisoft Pune in Mumbai to Ubisoft Montreal, which was the original developer of the original Prince of Persia, the Prince of Persia Sands of Time. Which
that's a delay, like delayed from in, that's a new level of delay. It was delayed, so it was meant to come out last January, I think. Then it got delayed a couple of months. So someone thought it's close, but it just needs a little bit more time. And then someone thought definitely not close. We're going to delay it indefinitely. And the only like next level jump up, your somber version of that delay is like delaying from developer to new developer, because that's how badly it's going. Like that's next level delay.
When they announced it, it looked pretty rough, to be honest. Like, it looked like the original game, and it's like, oh, this is a number of years into the future. It should look a little bit better if it's a remake, not just a remaster. Which is kind of sad, because I spoke to a producer, a senior producer at Ubisoft Pune at the time, and they were just like, so it was their first like lead game. It was the one that they were taking the lead on. And obviously that's not gone so well now. So that's like, I feel really, really bad for everyone who's worked on this. Like, I'm sure they've put their heart and soul into this, and it's just gone completely balls up. And I that's sad, but it is what it is, I guess. The Halo Infinite co-op campaign, which has been delayed a couple times, has been dated for tentatively late August, which means, Ben, maybe you and I can play Halo Infinite co-op eventually, but not so eventually. Oh, actually, that's true. We can. We have more of a likelihood to do it, because it'll be online co-op, split-screen co-op on a couch, still not dated, because the Xbox One obviously isn't powerful enough to play two versions of Infinite on one screen.
That makes sense.
Let's get rid of cross-gen games. Let's just go straight for, now that it's a little bit easier to get a Series X and a Series S and a PS5, like, let's just jump straight into this current generation rather than trying to drag the last one kicking and screaming behind us.
I have a suspicion that we've got at least one more year of cross-gen. So this gen really starts probably holiday 2023, when we probably get only current gen only. Each console's had a couple of games, but neither first party is really committed to only doing that. Like, well, I say a couple. Xbox had one, and PlayStation's had a couple. So they're both pretty keen to keep the cross-gen going.
Yeah, well, on that note, Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1 on Xbox One is delayed indefinitely. Developer Frogwares, which is has an office, not all of its offices in the Ukraine, is obviously dealing with a lot of stuff going on thanks to Russia. They've released the game on current gen and PS4. I don't know why the Xbox One version is proving problematic, but that is a thing. And the last one, I don't know how you feel about this movie. I can't remember if we talk about it or not. The Super Mario animated film starring none other than Charles Martin. Oh, nope, not Charles Martinet. Chris Pratt, sorry.
It's got a cameo, I think.
Well, not as Mario, because that's Chris Pratt, has been delayed into 2023. Did you see the way that they announced this delay?
Very strange. It's the most Nintendo thing ever. Just a tweet saying, this is Miyamoto. Like, it didn't seem real. It seemed like a dodgy, fake, like, Photoshop. But of course,
I assure you, I have not been hacked. This is Miyamoto, and I've taken the Nintendo Twitter account for the day to tell you that this movie's delayed. Are you keen to see it when it comes out?
Oh, we'll see it when it comes out on a streaming service somewhere. I'm not going to go to a cinema to watch this movie. I haven't been to one for a while, actually. Uh-huh. It'll probably be okay, but I think it's going to be weird Mario having not Mario's voice. Like, I get it while they're doing it. You can't just have Charles Martinet doing his Wahoo constantly. Like, you probably need a bit more dialogue than that. But it's, like, he's got such an iconic voice that it's going to be weird to have Chris Pratt.
He can do dialogue. It's me, Mario. You're listening to Survivor.com. Like, he can do it. I'll put it at the start of this one if I remember. Like, he can do words. Like, do you think Pratt's going to do, like, a super stereotypical, like, American Italian kind of like, hey, I'm walking here kind of like thing, or is he just going to be Chris Pratt? And which is better?
It's going to be Chris Pratt. I think they're going full just American accents in like their normal accent, because you've got Charlie Day is he Luigi or is he?
Oh God, yeah, maybe.
Like, which is fine, but it's going to be like, I don't see Italian voices for these guys, and Jack Black is Bowser or Donkey Kong or something.
Your definition of this is fine and my definition of this is fine are very different from the sound of it.
Yeah, well, I don't really care that much. Like, I haven't seen the Sonic movie. I'm sure it's fine. It's made a bunch of money, but probably not very Sonic-y.
What video game movie would you like to see? Any franchise? Well,
I just watched Uncharted. It just came out on various platforms. Oh. And actually, not terrible, but it's like the characters are wrong. The story is okay. It is just an Indiana Jones style story, which is what the games were, really.
Is he too young? He's too young.
They're both too young. So Tom Holland is too young for Nathan Drake and Mark Wahlberg is too young for Sully. Like, they both need another 10 years on them. And then it would have been much better. The Australian who plays Chloe is kind of weird because it's like American, Australian accent. And whenever that happens in a movie, it's always like, so jarring, but I think that's just because you're so used to, or we're so used to just constant American accents. But to throw in a non-Chris or Liam Hemsworth accent is strange.
Now I know why people don't like this very podcast, Ben, because we have conflicting accents going on. I'm not American, but yeah. I've got the nasal. And you remind me of that TikTok from, is it like a kid's show with like mermaids or whatever? Like, oh, Chloe, the condensation. Oh, no. And then like one turns into a mermaid or something. Do you know what is that?
I think you've made that show up. Oh. Never.
Now I've got to figure out. I'll ask Matt what it is. There's like a show about kids who turn into mermaids when they get wet. Maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
All maybe.
Right. We're
There's a lot of weird like... Late 90s ABC kids shows in Australia were strange. That's one of the, I can't place that one, but it sounds like one of the more normal shows. Like, there were weird shows going on.
My husband's parents have a holiday house near the Round the Twist Lighthouse. So I know about that show because we drive by it occasionally. Anyway, I have taken a giant segue? No. Diversion? No. That's late. I'm done. Ben, how do we find you on the internet?
Ben_Salter on Twitter, and yourself?
SWrightAU, and that's me. And there's not a lot going on, to be honest. So we'll talk to you in 2 weeks, and maybe we'll be news. Maybe we'll have played a game that's not a From Software game. Maybe Ben will have played Cyberpunk. Yeah. Doubtful,
but yeah, there's no releases. Normally we have something coming up, so get through your backlog, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
I'll talk about Trek to Yomi. That's it. We're done.